It works? Okay. Are we missing?
Yeah, we're Senator Rumsfeld. Yeah, he's in the door.
Okay.
Yeah, he's here.
While our final committee member is making his way to the table, I'd like to welcome everybody here. I'd like to say that today's session, executive session, is an opportunity for the committee to have a discussion about the bills that we have, the bill, I should say, that we have in front of us today, 648, as well as any amendments that have been introduced or will be introduced today. As such, since we have several amendments, as you can see, to discuss, I'm going to ask for your indulgence to not have interruptions or expressions of support or opposition to a particular amendment while we're doing those discussions so that everyone can hear what's going on. Finally, I'd like to recognize and thank you for being here. We've had over 600, I think, as of this morning, email submissions alone. That certainly doesn't include all the written testimony we've received and phone calls every member of the committee has taken. So thank you again for your participation, and I'd like a motion to go into executive session.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Seconded. We are in executive session, Susan. Okay, the bill we have before us is 648. Oh, sorry, yes.
There we go.
Is that better? Sorry. People hear me in the back? Okay, great. If people do have difficulty hearing, just raise your hand or let a staff member know and we'll adjust that. 648, the bill that came over from the House dealt with system reliability as a measure. The committee, as everyone knows, decided that we wanted some more time to look at that, had some concern. I had some concerns about what the definition of system reliability was. At the end of when we were in executive session, we took up an amendment from Senator Forrester, mm-hmm. which I think we have in front of us, and maybe that should be the first amendment that we take up. So without any delay, S. Thank you, Susan. I have that one in front of me. It actually has Senator Forrester's name on it. Mm-hmm. Would someone care to speak to that? I'm happy to if no one else is mm-hmm. inclined. So it essentially replaces the system reliability language with or a participant-funded transmission facility. Fairly straightforward. I think there's an industry understanding about what participant-funded transmission facilities are. And however rudimentary my understanding of that is, I'll try it here, which is to say that the benefits accrue to the stakeholders in that type of profit, and it doesn't build it into the rate base, any of the costs into the rate base. I'm sure I'm leaving a lot out, but if you want me to speak up, thank you. Okay, I'll speak into the mic. So do we have any comments or discussion about amendment 2556S, and I should also add that we have some amendments that that affect that amendment, so I'd make that note. Now, if the committee would prefer, we can talk about the amendments that would affect that amendment, but maybe we have a discussion about this first. Senator Groen.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, as you and I discussed earlier, I think that we need to have some definition of participant-funded transmission facility, even though it may be an industry-understood term, I'm not so sure that that's in our RSAs of what that is, and I think we need to have some definition of that.
Okay, that being said, do others feel similarly, or maybe do we want to talk about the amendment that might
Yes.
How about, can we talk about Senator Luker's amendment, number 0007S, because I believe that that builds on the definition?
And just to clarify, that is, yeah, we get, that this really, I'm bringing this amendment for Senator Forrester, and that is really the same amendment as 0008, so they're just under different names, so.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, we'll take up whichever one you prefer. How about yours?
Mine.
Okay. Senator Forrester's amendment set the table, and then we'll go on to Senator Luker's amendment.
Well, I'm bringing it as a courtesy. I think there's merit in this amendment. I will say I have had a lot of expression of concern, though, that it is narrow, that it's targeting, it's narrower than eminent domain. It's targeting specific industries, and that is a concern that I have heard from a lot of folks in my area.
Can I ask for clarification of that, Senator, which is by participant-funded projects, I don't necessarily interpret that as addressing certain industries. I view that as addressing a certain funding mechanism for projects in any industry.
If I may, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I think the problem is it's with the same same problem with the amendment 2556S. We don't really have a good definition of what a participant-funded transmission facility is. And for that reason, I'm inclined not to vote for either one of these. We can't put something into place if we don't have a good definition as to what exactly are we doing here.
Okay. Senator Gruen, do you have, before putting you on the spot, Senator Gruen, I'll share my thoughts about the use of participant-funded as distinct from the system reliability, which we took up in the original 648. My sense is the system reliability had some ambiguity, and I had some concerns. Whether or not they ultimately are merited is to be debated, I suppose. But my concerns were that if we preclude a new technology from exercising eminent domain as a result of a system reliability requirement, that concerned me. And my concern was that, okay, if you have a wind generating plant, my sense is that's not going to take care of system reliability, but it might address renewable portfolio standards, et cetera. And so I was hesitant to support system reliability. With participant funded, I think that is a bit more consistent with 12A's preclusion of private, the constitutional amendments, 12A's preclusion of the use of eminent domain for private developments. And so I hear what people are saying about the definition of participant funded. I respect that. I respectfully, I guess, disagree in that I think that there's probably enough industry certainty with respect to that term, and it gets at the private development issue, which is the one that I had a concern with. Maybe this proves a point for me to talk about my amendment, my proposed amendment, which I apologize for not more ample time for you to digest that beforehand, but it's fairly straightforward. I actually don't see one with my name on it.
I have it.
May I borrow this?
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. So it essentially borrows Senator Forrester's original amendment, borrows from that language and adds something that adds clarity that to me strikes a balance. My effort in this, and I still hold the concern that we don't want to disincentivize public-private partnerships, because to me that's the wave of the future. I could be wrong. I don't know necessarily what that will look like, but I do also hear 12A's prohibition, and therefore have suggested that you'll see the language starting on 16, a transmission project is participant funded if none of the costs of the project are funded by the state or allocated to ratepayers. Thank you very
much.
You're welcome. And so what that suggests to me is if the state has some skin in the game, then it can properly exercise eminent domain, or at least go through the process of pursuing the exercise of eminent domain, which is why I offer that as a clarification. I'm going to need some help from Susan or Rick at some point in time to determine, at some point that we had a vote on some of these amendments and then move on to the others. But I think the conversation is built upon itself in a productive way, so I don't want to stop that.
Mr. Chairman, please. My concern, because you mentioned public-private partnerships, and I agree with you. I think that is going to be something we're going to be seeing more of. But I think if you include this language of a participant-funded transmission facility, I think you're going to put a chilling damp on those kinds of partnerships.
Okay.
And I don't feel comfortable enough with using this language. Because, again, we don't know what's going to happen in the future and what kind of an effect this is going to have.
Okay. Others? Thank you, Senator.
I Can I just back up, Mr. Chairman, and go broader, start from a broader scope and then...
Senator, you absolutely can.
Narrow it down.
Can I pass? Well, I don't know. Can just speak loudly enough so people can hear you.
From my perspective, and I've said this to many people, I'm in favor of the Northern Pass project. I think it would be good for New Hampshire. I am not in favor of the use of eminent domain for the project as it's structured now, because I believe it's a private entity, and as a non-public company, it is not a utility, has not been approved under any of the requirements that would be required for eminent domain, in my opinion. I don't think eminent domain should be used. Now, the language for arriving at that objective, that's the objective I would have in this, is that not only do I believe eminent domain should not be used, but I am leaning toward also not allowing the threat of eminent domain to be used until eminent domain has been authorized for a project. And again, I'm saying that in the light of, I think, that Northern Pass overall would be good for the state. I'm in favor of a project like Northern Pass. So, but I see it as a private project, and I see 12A in our Constitution as providing pretty simple clarity that it's not to be used for that. The participant-funded transmission facility, again, I still have a concern on definition. I think if the industry has an understanding for this, the industry must have some kind of definition of what that is. And I think in order to use that term, I would want to see a definition that's clear enough, that's transparent.
Can I ask a follow-up question to that, Senator?
Yes.
Thanks. I don't think my follow-up question addresses Senator Carson's concern, which is, and mine, about precluding public-private partnerships in the future. But does Senator Luther's amendment, number 0007S, that says, or for any private development, comma, including but not limited to participant-funded projects, not address that concern, in your opinion, because it's still, the example still contains that language? I just want to be clear.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe that would, and again, for any private development, and we're talking in this area of utilities, I think that probably would resolve that. It still doesn't answer the question about what is a participant-funded project exactly, and I'm a little concerned about that.
Okay, so, thank you. Are there other thoughts on the series of amendments we just discussed? Seeing none, am I missing any amendments that along these lines? Folks, any help from? Well, then let's take some votes, shall we? Are we okay? Are we ready for that?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I don't think I'm going to get a second. So does someone want to make a motion on mine?
I'll make the motion to ITL that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, is there a second?
You don't need to vote to kill it if you don't bring it forward.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
Why don't you spend your time on things that might have a chance?
Because that's mine. Because it's mine.
He wants to vote on his season.
If you want to vote, somebody can vote.
So, all right.
Well, how about this, Mr. Chairman?
That amendment's been moved, but it hasn't got no traction.
Okay. As a professional courtesy to a fellow senator, Senator Sanborn, I have brought in a couple of amendments for him because he would like them to be presented to the committee. I believe the first one is 2847S, and I guess I think we've all read it and have the discussion, so I'm kind of neutral here, so I don't know if you would want Senator Sanborn to come forward or you just would like to have the discussion amongst ourselves.
Well, I'm going to try to, having spoken to Senator Sanborn about this bill, I'm going to try to convey his thoughts on this, and if he decides that I don't do that, he'll give me a nod.
Okay.
But the 2847S, give me one moment to orient myself from my crushing defeat. Okay. I want to look at Senator Sanborn's other amendment before speaking to this one, so just bear with me.
Yeah.
2850, mm-hmm. Thank you. There we go. That's what I'm looking for, Senator. Okay, so we're at 2847, and I believe what this does is address some concerns that the Senator had with the current eminent domain statutes by making it clear that property need not be just residential property. It can be commercial property as well when that's subject to eminent domain. That should be subject or eligible for reimbursement. The second part of that, I got the nod. The second part of that is that the commissioner, and presuming the commissioner of the Department of PUC, Public Utilities Commission, adopts rules for system reliability, which has been an issue of concern among these committee members in the past through GELCAR, I'm presuming. Another nod. And then compensation would be, it appears to me, what we have in statute before plus 200% mm-hmm. on top of that, of the value of the property as the bottom for what a party who is subject to taking would be mm-hmm. compensated for the taking. Okay. Do people want to talk about that one? Senator Carson.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe commercial property is already covered. It is my understanding that commercial property is considered to be private property. So I think by striking the word private, to me, it really doesn't accomplish anything.
I'm sorry, Senator.
Right here.
Do you agree with that, though?
Which is used for residential purposes. Commercial property can be used for residential purposes. People can own apartment buildings and condominiums and rent them out. So I'm just really curious as to why are you going to now say you cannot, if you own an apartment building, why you would not qualify? So, I mean, to me, that might be a little confusing. In as far as to defining system reliability, I would feel more comfortable if the commissioner did not adopt the rules. I think when we had the public hearing, we got definitions from all over the place. I think if we're going to have a definition, if we're going to try to define what that is, I think what we should do is we should have the discussion here in the legislature, bring in the industry experts, and have us decide what okay. system reliability means. And finally, the second section, beginning on line 28, I have very, very similar language in an amendment that I'm bringing forward. So I would be inclined not to support this amendment.
Thank you, Senator. Others? Other discussion on amendment 2847.
One of the concerns that I have, I'm sympathetic with much of what's in here. A concern that I have with this is that this is bringing up issues that I don't believe were addressed in the public hearings for this bill, where we've dealt pretty exclusively with eminent domain for utility purposes, or if it's not deemed to be utility, we're having that discussion. And the broadening of this to eminent domain rules in general, which I believe that this does, I think should have a public hearing. I think they're pretty extensive. It has some significant ramifications, and I think should be open to a public hearing, and hence While I am very sympathetic to some of the language, I don't think this is the right place for it.
Thank you, Senator. Others? So it sounds like this amendment was not taken up. Okay, we'll move on to the next amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to present Amendment 2011-2850S. And perhaps since you might have spoken to Senator Sanborn.
Senator Sanborn's other.
That's the one we're taking up right now.
Sorry, all right. Yes, all right.
Thank you. So we're talking about 2850, and it's a new section, which essentially requires an act of the legislature to exercise eminent domain on a particular project, not on each of the parcels within that project, but for an entire project. So presumably, an entity would petition for the use of eminent domain on a project, and the PUC would do its regular process, and then the legislature would have to weigh in as to whether or not it...
I don't believe I have a copy of this. Do we have an extra copy?
2850?
I have an extra one. 2850S.
Thank you. Here you go.
Okay. I have an extra one. Mr. Chairman, the way that I read this is you're really talking about a transfer of responsibility from the PUC to the legislature to make decisions on these projects.
I think you're right, and I misspoke. I don't see the PUC referenced in here.
And I'm very, very concerned about that because the PUC is supposed to be a neutral place where we can have, where those discussions can be had. I think including the legislature here, I'm not sure how that's going to work because I really don't see a procedure here as to how this is going to work. And if I look on page 2 when under section 423:3 about land outside of town, there was a whole procedure here with the town may institute eminent domain proceedings by petition to the county commissioners, but then the rest of it has been struck out because basically you're talking about the Public Utilities Commission. I think this is probably overbroad, and I'm just really concerned about how is this going to work. I really don't see any kind of procedure. Are you talking about setting up a separate committee made up of legislators that are going to do this work, or is this going to be a bill that's going to come forward to the legislature? I really don't see any structure here, so I would be very concerned about what we're going to do here and how this is going to happen.
Thank you, Senator. Other comments?
Senator Luther. I share that concern. I'm not, I think bringing the legislature into the process would just slow it down. I don't quite understand the mechanism, how it's to work here, so I think it's going to gum up the process. So I've got some concerns with this amendment.
Senator Groen, do you have any input?
I very much the same input as the last that I mentioned, and that is that I believe this is broadening this well beyond what our public hearings dealt with on this, and I think there are major ramifications to this both with public and for the legislature, for the state, and for political subdivisions. I think this needs a hearing, and I think we need to try to attach it.
Thank you, Senator. It sounds like this amendment shall not be taken up either. We're not having success with our amendments today.
That's okay.
Okay, so we've not taken up Senator Carson/Sanborn amendments.
Okay.
We've not taken up Senator Luther's amendment for any private development, including but not limited to participant-funded projects. We've Senator Luther has his name on two of those, one of them with Senator Forrester. And then Senator Forrester's amendment, participant funded, I think we discussed and did not take up either. So that, I just, we have some more. sorry.
Let's go on and look at all.
sorry, I don't know. I don't mean to interrupt you, Senator. I see, I believe, two more in front of us.
Two?
This looks like it was from the original executive session.
Oh, yeah, okay.
and then 2844. So let's take up 1134H dated 6-3, which I think was brought to our committee for executive session last time we addressed this. And it would have replaced the language about a transmission facility not being needed for system reliability with, and I'm quoting, unless the transmission facility is designated as a reliability transmission upgrade by ISO New England, Inc. under its applicable Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
Bless you.
Excuse me. Okay. Would anyone care to speak to that? Senator Carson.
Yeah, thank you. I have some concerns here that we are turning over our sovereignty over to the federal government. And under the guise of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, I believe that through our own PUC that we have the ability to make these decisions. And why would we allow the federal government to do this for us?
Okay. Thank you. Others? Senator Grubb.
Question, Senator Carson. If we were allowing the PUC to do this, are we still looking at it as a reliability transmission upgrade but determined by our PUC? Is that what you're thinking on that?
Well, my thinking here is that we still need to define system reliability because we still do not have a good hold on what is system reliability. So that would be a one-part process. The other part would be that is what the PUC is doing now. They're the ones that make the decisions. It is something that we as a state has decided that this is how we want to have this handled. I just feel very uncomfortable turning that responsibility over to the federal government. The federal government tends not to be very close to the people. We are, and the PUC is. I can imagine having public hearings down in D.C. How are the people going to get there? And that would be my concern. Yeah.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. I believe we would not be turning it over to the federal government, but to ISO New England, under which operates under the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission tariff.
Mm-hmm.
And so the you know, it would be within New England, but still outside of New Hampshire.
May I?
Please.
My concern, you know, again, is yes, you are dealing with the Federal Regulatory Commission. So, you know, again, I stand on what I said before, but you're now leaving it up to another entity to decide what's best for New Hampshire. I think New Hampshire is well capable of defining and deciding what is best for New Hampshire. I don't want to see it taken out of the hands of New Hampshire, the people of New Hampshire, to go to some other entity that perhaps will not do what is in the best interest for New Hampshire, but rather for all of New England. And that would be my main concern.
Other, yes.
Yeah, Senator Forster and I met several times with PUC looking at, looking at energy issues. And one of the clear issues that came out of it is that the PUC feels that its voice at ISO New England is quite limited and muted. ISO New England is a very complex organization, and PUC, let's put it this way, they're not entirely satisfied with the voice that we're able to have within that larger structure. And so I share the same concerns that Senator Carson would have, giving that to them.
Okay. I'm gonna not go over. I know we have one more amendment to go, but I just want to be very clear in our business today that what the action or inaction has been. So I've gotten the impression that I've gotten is on any of the amendments that we've taken up so far, there wouldn't have been had I moved them a second for those amendments. But I just want to make sure everyone's on the same page with that is accurate, because I'll go through the amendments again and move them if that would be helpful for clarity's sake.
Not entirely in agreement with that, because I'm still looking at the differences of these, and I'm not saying that I would not
I still have a few additional questions, but I wanted to see the whole picture before
going
back to that. So I would like to come back to these, to each of the three initial ones that we talked about, but after looking at everything.
That's fine. So I'm going to then proceed to the last amendment that I have, which is Senator Carson, Senator Bradley, 2844S. Senator Carson, would you care to speak to that?
Okay. This amendment has been worked on for quite a while. One of the promises that we made, the supporters that came to the public hearing, was that we were going to go into the North Country and we were going to talk with people. And that's exactly what we did. We went with Senator Forrester, Senator Luther, myself, and Senator White went. We went with Will Abbott from the Forest Society. And we went up and we talked with people about what was happening up in their area. What suggestions could they give us how to deal with this issue? So I took back what they told us, and I worked really hard on bringing forward an amendment. So what I'd like to do is to just explain what this amendment does, because we really concentrated on the issue of eminent domain, looking at our statutes, looking at our constitutional amendment, and how can we make it stronger on behalf of the property owner. So the first thing we did in the first section is to say that no one can threaten you with eminent domain. Someone cannot come to your property and to say to you, if you don't sell us your property, we're going to take it by eminent domain. Right now, there's really no place for people to go when that happens to you. So what we did is we said that if any time anybody threatens you, you can make a complaint to the I believe it's to the PUC, and if they are found guilty, they will be fined $25,000. We wanted to send a very, very strong message that this type of behavior is not to be tolerated in the state of New Hampshire. The second concerned right of entry. Many people complained that people were coming on their property and they had no idea. They had no idea that these folks were coming. So what I did was put in a provision that they have to notify the property owner within 30 days by certified mail that they want to come onto your property. They have to tell you the name of the utility, who they are. They have to give you a time. They have to give you a place. They have to tell you what part of your property they want to enter. And let me look at the rest of that. And when they come to your property, they have to present themselves to you, and they have to show you identification so you know who you're dealing with. It's not some nameless, faceless person who's saying, I represent here and I'm here. They're going to have to show you an identification card to say, this is who I am and this is who I represent. The third section is appraisal required, which says that any property that is proposed to be acquired by eminent domain, that the property owner shall have a reasonable opportunity to have the property appraised by an independent qualified appraiser selected by you, the owner, not by the PUC, not by the utility. You get to choose who you want to appraise your property, and the public utility will reimburse your cost up to $1,500 for that appraisal. So now you will have the opportunity to get an independent appraisal. No petition to acquire property or any interest in property through eminent domain shall be filed under this chapter unless the owner shall have first refused to voluntarily sell the affected property or interest therein for an amount equal to 200% of the public utility's appraised value thereof. This is the language that came from Senator Sanborn's amendment. 200%. I also put in a new paragraph, residential owner option, that the resident owner shall be awarded reasonable relocation and housing replacement expenses to not exceed 10% of the compensation for the taking. If residential tenant is also displaced as a result of the taking, the tenant shall be awarded up to 6 months of the actual monthly rent paid by the tenant prior to notice being given under this particular section. So again, if you're going to be relocated, they're going to have to pay for that. There is also a provision in concerning project delay. If after a period of 5 years, the project for which the land or the property rights were taken has not commenced, the utility shall offer the person from whom such land and rights were taken the first option to buy such land or rights at the current market value. So no longer can they come in and take your property, hold it for a period of time, and then sell it to somebody else. They have to come back to you as the property owner and offer it back to you at fair market value. And the last thing this does is it establishes a committee. And this tended to be a little controversial, because in reading the statutes, the utility can go to the PUC and petition for a hearing, but the public has no place to go. Where can the public go for a hearing on an issue of eminent domain? And I felt that the executive council would be an appropriate place to ask for such a hearing. But some people didn't think that was a good idea. So what I did was formed a study committee to look at the possibility of doing something like this. It can be a little tricky. So I felt that if we're going to do it right, we need to hold a series of hearings to figure out the best way to give the public the opportunity to voice their concerns. And that pretty much encapsulates the amendment that I'm putting forward.
Thank you, Senator.
You're welcome.
I have a question.
Sure, I'll take questions.
So the committee, so that's interesting. So that's it's a study committee.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not a committee to a...
It's okay. I've been there, done that.
It's not a committee that reviews the determination made, but... Okay.
No.
So could we, maybe it's clear to everyone, but if we could add just the word study in front of there's established a committee.
Okay.
Which would then make it clear that what we're doing...
It says to investigate the procedural rights of the landowner when a petition is presented to the public utility commissions by utility seeking eminent domain.
Well, I'm fine. I mean, as long as the understanding is that's a study committee, it's not a legislative piece at the end of the process that says...
No. Okay. And the duty says they shall investigate the procedures available and potentially available to landowners for obtaining a hearing when their land is the subject of a petition filed with the public utility commissions by a utility seeking to take such property.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay.
I appreciate the clarification, Senator.
Sure.
Are there questions or comments on this amendment? Senator Luzman.
Yeah, Senator Carson, I'm still a little unclear. The committee, you were saying initially that your thought was that the executive council might have been the best place for this to happen. So you're saying the result of the committee is to come up with a what might be that
sure.
committee
it
would
be a procedure to come up with a procedure because these
to
folks
hear
right
the publics
mm-hmm. okay. say a utility wants to take some of your property and you don't agree
right.
with that. There's public. Yes. Where does the public go?
Right.
Where do they go? So to give them a place to go,
right.
to get a public hearing. So that's why I put that in there. It's just an idea. If it's something the committee objects to, and you could very well say that the executive council could say, you know, we don't think this is a good idea, and put in a procedure for them to tell the PUC that we don't think this is a good idea. I mean, I left it very vague because I want to be able to give the committee the ability to really come up with something.
So, I'm sorry, Senator, you all set?
Yeah.
So presumably, you have some proposals with respect to the procedures for the use of eminent domain in here, but you're also saying form a study committee to see if other
right.
changes need to be made. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, Senator.
Senator Carson, in the second part of this, the right to enter part, does this only apply, it appears to only apply when ownership of the land cannot be ascertained. So if there are clear boundaries, this does not give a utility or an entity seeking to use eminent domain right to enter the land. It's only if the ownership is cannot be ascertained without entry to do survey work.
Correct. Because we had taught, one of the things that we heard about, that a lot of these folks own very large pieces of land. And they have to come onto the property to do survey work. This is where I believe this is going to kick in.
And because, in, again, in your, in this type of a situation, they own a large piece of property and they're not certain of exactly where their boundaries are. So in order to determine where the boundaries are and whether that is, in fact, their property, a survey has to be, the surveyors have to be able to access the land.
No. If you own, say, a 5,000-acre tract of land and they want to use part of it, they want to come in and survey what's there, mm-hmm. the part that they want. And so that's where they would have to go to the property owner. They'd have to send a letter saying, this is, we're coming on your property this time, this date, this is the area of your property we're coming to, so people will know when they're there.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think, Senator Carson, that line 21 and 22 would have to be clarified, because
okay.
right now it appears that only applies if the boundaries can't be ascertained in line 22.
Maybe we can ask our attorney maybe to take a look at that and see if we need to make some changes to that to clarify it.
Well, it says in either case a public utility shall have the right to enter onto the land. So mm-hmm. that to me makes it sound like there's a right to enter, and I believe I don't have it in front of me, but I believe 371.2 contains that right as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this is 371.2A.
Okay. And I didn't see the in either case. Okay, that answers that.
It passes. It's the statute, so
okay.
I have a copy of it.
If that's the case, and the committee decides to pick it up, it'll be easy enough to pick before.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
The meeting's pretty good with the intent.
Okay.
Please.
Senator Carson, on lines 12 to 15 on page 2 is the 200%
mm-hmm.
rule that was introduced.
Yeah.
That 200% offer of the assessed value, appraised value, has to be made, but if that were not accepted, then if it went from there to eminent domain, then would the utility be able to take that for just 100% of appraised value at that point?
I don't know that question. What we wanted to do was to really compensate the person.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we had actually talked about raising that up to 300%. That might be appropriate.
So that's a I'm sorry, Senator. Go ahead.
No.
Go ahead. I'll ask later. Okay.
It's inappropriate.
Okay. I had a follow-up question to
sure.
that question,
mm-hmm.
but you may have just answered it and I missed it.
Okay.
So the offer has to be 200%. Is that what the ultimate payout would be?
Right.
Okay.
It would be if they can offer 200% and the person can accept it. If they choose not to, then at that point, I would imagine all that's gone.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Gruen, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Did you have other questions? Okay. Okay, so everyone have time to answer the questions that they needed to answer about this? amendment. Senator Groen, did you want to, we could do a couple things. One is, I know you had mentioned you wanted to look at the three amendments that had been discussed earlier, but we can also consider Senator Carson's amendment 2844.
I would like to go back to the 007 or 008, which I believe are identical, and ask Senator Luther, do you have any clarification on the or for private development, just exactly what that is, what was intended by that?
That's this was the author of this is Senator Forrester, so she did better. I just brought this, I think we had to do it under my name, so she can better address that than I can.
May I suggest that, I'll try, Rick, and then if you don't, that doesn't work, you let me know, and with all due respect to the senators and representatives in the room, I just want to be sensitive to the time that we have. But I believe that it has to be a reference to 12A, mm-hmm. which the constitutional amendment, which would preclude the use of eminent domain for a private development.
It's the same argument.
It's so. Does that answer the question? I think that's straight where that comes from, and then including but not limited to participant-funded projects provides an example of that.
Makes it clear that the participant-funded project statutorily falls within the definition of a private development, even if constitutionally, of course, might think it doesn't.
Thank you.
Okay. That helps. Thank you.
So, once again, I think we've talked about all of these. I just want to do it technically correctly, so I'll move this amendment just to go through this process. I'm moving amendment 0008. Someone needs to support that, or else we just go through the same process we did earlier today.
I will second that.
Seconded. Is there discussion? I would only add that I think my amendment would clarify this even further. And not close the door to participant-funded projects that were coupled with the state in some way going forward. But I think I've made my point. Okay, it's been seconded. Do we have further discussion other than that? There seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed, no?
No.
2-2, it fails. Okay. Are there any, so we took up, failed, 2-2. And then we have, are there any others that people, I mean, I'm happy to take up another, but I think we're going to, why don't I just cut to Senator Carson's, unless there are others. Senator Groen, did you, have another one that you wanted to take up?
No.
No. Okay. Senator Carson's. I'll move Senator Carson's. Is there
a... can we have discussion? I just want to make...
Of Senator Carson's?
Yeah.
Of course we can, but I think I need... What's that?
Yes, 2844.
2844, yes.
I would like to actually make it... I would like to see the this would be page 2... Line 14 increased to 300%.
So you'd like a committee amendment,
right,
to reflect that,
right,
300%.
Right.
On line 14 of page 2. Okay. Do we have a discussion about that suggestion?
I have a couple of concerns again about that. This is something that was not discussed in a public hearing. This has some pretty broad ramifications. I am
receptive to the idea, but I'm concerned that we don't, that we haven't discussed the ramifications of this and allowed the public to present. The second part of it is, I still, I'm struggling with the wording of 12 through 15, that the way it seems to me, and probably Mr. Lehman could answer this, the way it seems to me is that a utility would need to offer 200 or even 300%. But if the property owner did not accept that, the utility would be under no obligation to pay that in an eminent domain process. That is the way I read that, and am I correct?
That's correct. The compensation would be determined by 371.4A, which is after rejecting the 300% or the would be market value. That's what the utility would pay.
Please continue.
Is that, Rick, I'm just trying to understand, in the eminent domain process, is that the standard? I mean, is that what the code says? That's okay.
Okay, can I, I'm going to weigh in on this one, which is to say I agree. I'm not comfortable necessarily with the 300%. I'm also not sure that it's clear with respect to that the 200% has to be the payout. That being said, I think we have plenty of time before we vote on this today, and when it's going to be taken up, which I'll remind mm-hmm. everybody, this will be taken up in the full Senate, of course, within the first four sessions. It has to be. So
yep.
We'll have mm-hmm. time to clarify that, and I would go on record, Senator Gruen, with you suggesting that it should be a 200% payout. But maybe we gather more information in the interim, but I think the principle of this, of Senator Carson's amendment, is one that I can support.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I just want to understand what you're saying. So you're saying you would like to see the payout if eminent domain was used at 2, I just want to
correct.
Be clear. At the,
okay.
yeah. Right, because that's,
okay.
I'm mm-hmm. I like that approach.
Okay.
And I just don't think it's, I think maybe that was the intent, but that's not how it reads.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
okay.
for clarity's sake, that's
yeah,
my intent.
I would be fine with a change like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we won't do a committee amendment. I think we're going to move it. Or do we want to do a committee amendment that says the payout's 200%, or do we want to pass this as is, knowing that an amendment's going to come in to clarify that?
Either way.
I think if
how fast can you work, right?
I can't come up with mine sitting right here. But I can
right.
definitely get it done by
right. So it can okay. we can I think we can clarify that
right,
with the floor amendment next.
We're
all
on floor we're
okay.
all on board with that. I'm
right.
fine.
Okay.
So it's been moved, it's been seconded by myself. I did second.
No, you moved it.
Oh
you moved
I,
it.
No, I thought Senator Carson seconded.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I figured somebody else should
you moved it.
I moved
did you
it.
Move it? I'll second it.
Okay.
All those in favor oh sorry, first is there more discussion?
Just for the record again, if this were an offer situation prior to the use of eminent domain, I would be comfortable with Senator Luther's 300%. If it is both the offer and the actual payout, should eminent domain be used, I would have to think.
Well, we're not changing it to
yeah.
300 now. If Senator
okay,
Luther
so
wants to bring an amendment to that effect, he can do so. But I think right now we're saying 200. That it is clear that it's the offer, but that it will be made clear with an amendment on the floor that it is the intent to have that be the pay.
That's
okay.
The pay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Saying none, that's 4-0. That might be necessary, shouldn't it? Wouldn't it? Could I have a motion?
So I'll move on the pass as amended, right?
648 as amended by 2844. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No.
And who's taking this?
I'll take it out.
Yeah.
Well, it's yours. Do you want to take it out?
Sir, please, you need to sit down.
We're still in executive session, sir. We're in executive session.
One comment. This is a bill about
yes.
down.
You have to sit down, Mr. Mullen, please.
Do we have, I'm sorry, I did you want to bring it out? It's your amendment?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's
so
fine.
So, Susan, I'll bring it out.
Okay.
Thank you. Can I have a motion to move out of executive session?
So moved.
We're done. We'll meet. We'll reconvene in 2 minutes in 101. Thank you.
101.